Hi everybody, and welcome to Dublin Tech Talks. We're in our new home here in the Needle offices. Today on our show we have Conor O'Donoghue, who's VP of Product for Circuit. Welcome to Dublin Tech Talks.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Good to have you here. So you're doing a meetup for us tonight.
That's right, yes.
But before we get into what the meetup is and everything that goes with that, can you give us a bit of a background about how you got your kind of on your journey on product and how you ended up working in Circuit?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, like a lot of people in tech, I started out in college in engineering, got a bachelor's in electronic, and then did a master's in bioengineering. But straight away then I moved to London and entered the world of consulting. So technology consulting for a EY, a Big Four firm, joined their graduate program. But the thing I loved most about that was dealing with clients and dealing with customer kind of pain points and seeing the capacity for software to be deployed at scale to solve those. After about 2 or 3 years, I found myself moving to California with EY, and then not long after that, found a role in product management, which I felt like was all the fun parts of consulting, except on a single product for a longer term. So I joined a health tech startup in the Bay Area called LeanTaz. They were focused on using kind of data science and machine learning to optimize patient access and patient wait times in large hospital networks in the US. So it was a really fun kind of challenge around, heavy data science product mixed with kind of trying to deploy very usable UX for maybe users who are extremely busy with their day jobs, like nurses and pharmacy staff and administrators in hospitals, which was a lot of fun. I stayed with those guys for about 4 years, went through multiple funding rounds, eventually led to an acquisition there. And that was a really good experience for me in product. I learned a lot. I entered at an entry-level PM position and ended up in a leadership position. After about a decade out of the country, decided to relocate back to Ireland and found Circuit in that process. Been with Circuit now for about a year. So Circuit are a B2B fintech focused on sort of being the trusted source or verifying the trusted source in every business transaction. So we sell predominantly to auditors, but the platform itself, it's kind of a toolkit to help audit activities be more efficient and, increase response rates on things like confirmation requests. So while we sell to auditors, it's used by a wide variety of personas. So it helps auditors interact with their clients and interact with information providers like banks, law firms, things like that. So it's quite a challenging user experience.
Traditionally non-tech users trying to make it easier for them to access
Yeah,
the
that's
technology,
right.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So, lots of different personas, lots of different use cases, and so it's a fun time to be at Circuit.
Yeah, great. And first question I always ask people that come back from a farm, especially West Coast, because it's seen as the kind of the HQ of tech and product. What how do you find, the similarities or the differences in Ireland and obviously West Coast, and kind of how far behind are we in our mentality to kind of West Coast or San Francisco thinking?
I suppose I wouldn't position it as behind, just very different. And I think if you try mimic another kind of area or culture too much, you won't succeed. So, but definitely noticed a lot of differences. So, I think for one, maybe people and companies are leadership maybe in Ireland are a little bit more conservative and more realistic maybe with their ambitions. There's a period there in California where your self-valuations just got absolutely insane and mission statements all revolved around changing the world, from day one. So that's obviously quite an obvious difference. But other than that, you've got a lot of passionate people, a lot of talented people in Ireland. I think maybe the pool of talent is just a lot smaller. So finding people is really difficult. Everyone who works in tech in the US is trying to be in the Bay Area. So when you're recruiting, it's quite easy to find. Yeah.
It's
find
really, contact. It's very competitive in the Bay Area for, right. for hiring.
Yes.
Because everybody's able to offer kind of high salaries and maybe options aren't
vague
as,
packages.
You know, RSUs aren't as once were, or options weren't as attractive, but the packages are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Compared. So for startups trying to compete with the yeah. Googles and Metas of the world, it's very difficult.
Yeah. And how have you found then coming back to Ireland and the Ireland way of working? Like I read one article and it was the nice bit about Ireland. It's has the American work ethic with a European mindset. So we can switch off or we can, yeah. you know, we work really hard, but we can come back and actually turn off and switch off.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it that way before. It is true. Coming back to Ireland, you know, I had only thought of it when I actually relocated. I'd never actually worked in a professional environment in Ireland before.
That's
now.
A good point,
I've
yeah.
been like north of 10 years into my career at this stage. Because I went straight to London and then yeah. to the US. I think in Ireland, people work very, very hard. And, you know, are a little bit maybe more pragmatic and tactical and less interested in kind of vision and longer term sort of strategy. So I think maybe that's something we could take from the US market. They're very good at seeing kind of long term
yeah.
play. But Irish people are very enjoyable to work with as well, obviously, because kind of straightforward and, you know, very specific in their asks and very specific in their expectations. So that's kind of been refreshing.
Cool. All right. So we got talking tonight because you're doing our meetup, which is great.
Yeah.
So you're going to be doing fundamentals of running product teams. I like
that's
your
right.
little slogan, getting the simple things
yes.
right.
Yes.
So what will kind of what are you going to be focusing on, or what are the simple things right, and how do you fundamentally create a great product team?
Yeah. So I intentionally put that piece in there because I think product management can be overcomplicated.
Yeah.
And can get very fluffy and sort of pie in the sky thinking. But there are actually just four or five very specific pragmatic things you can do to get your product team kind of operating at a higher level, better quality and more speed. So that's the focus tonight. I'm just gonna kind of contextualize things in a standard product development lifecycle, four phases: road mapping, discovery, execution, and then launch and post-launch. And then just talk about, you know, how high performing effective PMs are operating within each of those phases and the kind of activities that they're focused on.
So go on, give us a bit of briefing about what do you see as when people are high performing, what are their traits, or how do you kind of identify when they're high performing?
Okay, so a few would be discipline around road mapping, not just putting things onto the roadmap because it's a neat idea or it's a cool piece of technology that you want to incorporate into your product. A roadmap item should be defensible. So it should be directly impacting a business goal, driving ARR, mitigating against churn, maybe helping comply with regulation, something like that. So that would be one. Discipline and focus, not trying to solve every interesting problem, but choosing something that we know we can have an impact on and running with that. And then early doors, defining your success metrics. So before you write a line of code or put up a design in Figma, what would success look like and how would we measure it? And then sticking to that and actually reporting on that after the fact of something being launched. And then I guess the third one would be, often referred to in product management as falling in love with the problem rather than the solution.
Yeah.
So squads tend to, when they get into discovery sessions, immediately jump to whiteboarding, wireframes or flows or mockups when maybe the team hasn't even got conviction on what problem they're trying to solve is. So I think a lot of product management is really like beating that drum of, can we articulate this problem in a single sentence? And if we can't, we don't actually have conviction on what it is yet. So if you can get to the nuts and bolts of the problem, the solution is a lot easier then to actually drive towards. So I would say spend way more time focusing on identifying the real problem rather than playing with solutions.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
You hear like Des Traynor spoke about it when early days Intercom, they focus so much time on finding the problem rather than talking to customers all the time, really focusing on what they were actually trying to solve. And that I remember hearing that about 5 or 8 years ago now, 9 years ago, and it was like, oh, okay, yeah, like if you go about your day's journey or whatever you're doing in this job is what problem am I trying to solve and how can I fix that one problem or what are we offering as a solution to a problem? It's a different type of mindset to think like that.
It is, and it actually takes discipline because it's exciting to build features and to talk about features and to make a roadmap full of cool, shiny features. So as a PM, you find yourself in meetings a lot of time trying to pivot people back onto what problems are we trying to solve. The features will kind of become obvious if you get that bit right.
And would that be kind of how you as a PM work with stakeholders? How do you kind of do that in tech and non-tech communication? Like, is that one of the challenges when you're starting to scale a product management environment or product management ecosystem? It's that bringing it back to simple technology and business functionality rather than sprinting off and focusing only on the tech thing and forgetting about the business need.
Yes, absolutely. So we try, and anything that gets onto our roadmap has to have three pieces of information minimum:
Okay.
a problem statement clearly defined, a success metric. So what would success look like, measurable, and then a business objective. What is the point of doing this? Are we trying to drive revenue? Are we trying to mitigate a competitive risk or a churn
Yeah.
risk? So that's the standard to get something onto our backlog to even be put on the table for road mapping. Now, anyone can come with that idea. So all the PM is expected to do is curate and ensure that that standard is being met. But the ideas come from everywhere. They come from customers, they come from leadership, they come from PMs and other product team members, they come from cross-functional stakeholders. So try to open up the channels with your internal software to kind of cast that net wide and pull in ideas from everywhere. And you'd hope then that your PMs are disciplined about ensuring the structure of how those ideas are kind of written
Yeah.
is up to scratch before you actually get into a meeting and prioritize them against each other.
And how do you find who would usually come with probably the business needs, the user needs? Is it customer feedback? How do you go about that journey on, your product is working really well, pat each other on the back, and then you kind of fall asleep. Like, where's the user feedback? Is that coming from your customer success teams? How is that brought back into the kind of back into your ecosystem?
Yeah, well, I'm speaking
Not just in Circle, but like in general.
broadly. Yeah, I'll speak more so from a B2B
Yeah.
standpoint. Consumer products, it's a little bit different,
Okay,
although
yeah.
there is crossover. But in B2B, you really try to leverage your what I'd call your outbound teams, your sales team, your customer success and customer support teams. They know their customers inside out and they know their prospects inside out. And so they have really rich insight to share with product teams. So I would take a lot of input from those groups and then where you can ask them to join a call or join a prospect call and actually be a fly on the wall in some of
Yeah.
the meetings. Sometimes your customers can't tell you what's coming next. So there is also an expectation to stay up to date with the state of the market and the industry. So looking ahead 3, 5 years at the new technologies arriving, what opportunities are there? A day-to-day user of your pro platform might not tip you off on something like that. So it's a combination of your own
Yeah.
PM research and then leveraging your teams who kind of are essentially the voice of your user.
I do find some B2B companies that have become product companies. They forget that there's a, and they don't hire the sales environment and they're trying to figure out what the customer needs are. They seem to nearly miss a trick on having that customer, that go-to-market section of their business, and they've struggled then with the kind of iterational changes of their product, or they build a product without the actual trying to solve what problem. And I've seen that a bit when you're talking to customers that are, you know, looking to build a product team, and you're like, what's the ecosystem for the product manager?
Yeah, and even actually PMs can be a little bit resistant to taking input from those outbound teams. Mm. But in my experience, if they're strong, they'll have really, really rich insight. They know the users, they know the prospects, they know the market. So it's goldmine of good product ideas. Yeah. So develop a good relationship with those teams, develop trust, and it should work out.
I've loads of questions, so I'm just going to go through mine. More and more AI, ML, machine learning, NLP, all those worlds are coming into product play. How do you see that fitting into, say, Circuit's ecosystem, or just even B2B or B2C product builds, and how kind of that NLP stuff is going to really change how products are built or looked at?
Yeah, everyone's being asked what's their AI strategy
right now. Yeah, the consultancies are going, happy days, I've been brought in again.
I'll tell you, just from a product manager's perspective, you know, it's different for if you're a developer or a designer, I'm sure. But I think, you know, the top PMs will leverage the technology to make themselves better. Mm. The position that product managers take in the development life cycle is everything is still quite ambiguous. Like we just talked about, the problem isn't well defined. Mm. The parameters and the scope is not well defined. So it's not an area that you can just feed into a ChatGPT and it's going to give you the right answer, but it is a tool you can use. So like I was just playing around with ChatGPT today and like asking it for a competitive analysis on our company, asking it for a template to write a PRD for a specific feature. You could feed in customer surveys and have it summarize them. So there's endless amount of use cases to make a product manager's life better. Is it going to replace PMs overnight? No, definitely not, because the problem space is too ambiguous to just like plug a bot into, because the PM's role is almost get the prompt right in a way. In terms of the tech itself, we're obviously looking at ways to incorporate it into our platform. Mm. Early days, so you know, more to come on that soon.
But yeah, but that comes around with infrastructure and like cloud usage and everything that comes with products. Like they're all going to feed off growth within that space, spurned by this technology or newer technology. So there's just more to play with within a build space, I'm guessing, as you're looking down the pipeline and down the road of, right, where is it now? Where are we going to be in 6 months? You can't even think 18 months anymore. No, it's 6 and 12.
The pace of change is so rapid. And that actually is something I'll touch on tonight. Road mapping as well is like road mapping out too far into the future in a startup, especially in the current technical landscape, is probably not wise to invest too much time, because a lot of pivots will likely come soon. So, yeah.
So it's not been too stuck in this is the roadmap, this is how we're going. It's going to go in an S all the way up. Yeah.
The vision remains the same.
Yeah.
The path to get there might pivot multiple times.
Cool. Two more things. You mentioned about your journey when you were in San Francisco, from when you joined the business there to multiple kind of series raises and then an acquisition and an exit. What did you learn from that, or kind of what learnings? Because you see a lot of businesses in the Ireland ecosystem want that knowledge and want that experience. But what is that kind of, what did you learn from that, and kind of how did that shape your story?
Yeah, I learned a few things. I think we had really strong leadership at Lean Taz, and you know, they were consistent with a few things that I think really paid off. One was they were obsessed with actually solving the customer's problem and doing the right thing by their customers. Mm. So if there was ever any question about we're not getting our ROI that we expected, or we have a question about a contract or anything like that. We treated our customers as partners rather than, you know, locking them into long-term contracts or anything like that. And I think in the long run, that pays off. You'd even have boomerang customers who might go away and come back. And reputationally, I think that was a wise move that over a five-year horizon really paid off. Having a very high bar for who you hire. Sometimes it can be even frustrating if you really want to get people who need resource, but we set our expectations high and we would wait and wait until we found the right person. That paid off as well. And then just trusting the people you hire to do their job. So our leadership were excellent at articulating, I want problems X, Y, Z solved, and then letting you do it. They check in, obviously, regularly to see what progress was, but they trusted the people they brought in to do it.
That's good. That's a mature leadership way.
Yeah.
I'll go back to two more things, the recruitment side and also kind of product management, where is it going to go? Hypothetical question. You mentioned around taking your time in hiring. A lot of people didn't, and there was a big bump in the road last 18 months. Mm. You know, what do you look for when you're hiring within your own team now, or when you hire? What as a maybe a mid-level product owner, manager type person to a more established product manager, what are the kind of key areas you want when you're talking to people?
Yeah, with a PM team, people come from such a wide array of backgrounds. You're not only thinking about the individual, but the balance in the team as well. So you can have extremely technical PMs, and then maybe PMs more like really good at on the marketing side or carving a narrative or something. And then on another, you know, axis, you're going to have industry transplants, like accountants coming into fintechs or doctors coming into health techs, et cetera. And then software backgrounds, people who know, you know, ticketing systems and, you know the technology that we use.
Yeah.
So I would be looking for a spread, especially if I'm lucky enough to have, you know, north of two or three PMs. And I would be looking for certain mindsets. So when you speak to them, coherency and clarity and getting to the point quickly. If they're talking through a case study or a product that they worked on before, again, could they articulate the problem that they tried to solve for the user? And then could they reflect and evaluate how well did they actually solve it with numbers or with something measurable?
Okay. We'll give that a minute because we can edit. This is later. You can hear them coming down the stairs. we'll finish up next. We have to get going. And last thing on the hiring side, you know, the three traits you look for or you've had successful is within a PM team. What would they, those kind of three continuous kind of traits that you see for strong PMs?
Yeah, I would say high agency. So if you've got people who don't feel like they can solve their own problems, PM is probably not the right role for them, especially in a startup. So people who will encounter a problem and their immediate reaction is to try solve it and get scrappy about how they solve it as well. Comfort with ambiguity. So again, I'm speaking from a PM in a startup position.
Enjoy the gray.
You're likely not going to have the documentation. You're likely not going to have very specific direction. Like your leaders are going to say, I know there's some sort of a problem over here. Can you look into it? And you have to have the ability to draw boundaries around that and move forward with something. And then, you know, a lot of context switching as well. I think you'll see tonight, PM is involved at every stage of this life cycle. So you're road mapping, you're doing discovery design sessions, you're managing a sprint and moving tickets through a Kanban board. Then you're reporting on the outcomes as well. So in a given day, and then on top of all that, you've got the tactical support coming in at all times, bugs, small enhancement requests. So multitasking and context switching is a big one.
Cool. All right. Going to leave it at that. We have to get to our meetup tonight. Yeah. Conor Dunne, VP of Product in Circuit. Thanks a mil for your time today and tonight. And really